Hey, everybody. Hope you had a good weekend. I want to thank everybody who came out to Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey. Had a great time this weekend. Great turnout. Really fun crowds. A couple of drunk birthday women, but what are you going to do? It's their birthday, and they're drunk. It happens. And October 17th to the 19th, I am going to be at Comedy Castle in Royal Oak, Michigan. Always love being there. Come on out. Always fun if you're in the area. Royal Oak, October 17th to the 19th, Comedy Castle. I got a problem. I don't know how to deal with it. You know, I work at The Late Show with Colbert, and one of the security guys there, a really nice guy, he calls me Eric, and he's been calling me Eric for like 3 years, and I don't have the heart to correct him, and I don't know what to do. Seriously. And even show him my badge with my first and last name, and he's like, okay, thanks, Eric, and because he doesn't really read the name. And then I even like had somebody say my name around him, like Paul, and he didn't get it. It's like, hey, Eric. And and it's even affecting my life because, like, you know, I went to Apple, I had to buy something, and they asked me for my name, and I was like, Paul Mercurio. It's really, if anybody has a suggestion on how I can get this guy to get my name right, I feel bad. I don't want to hurt his feelings. Tweet at Paul Mercurio, let me know, because I'm stuck. So this is Paul Eric Mercurio right now. And my guest this week is Danny Houston. He comes from the famous Hollywood Houston family. Danny's an actor, director. His father is the great John Houston, and his sister is Angelica Houston. 40 years in the business. Great stories from his family, his father teaching him how to make movies. Really, really cool guy, and a really great conversation. We talk about his new movie and other stuff he's doing. And hope to see you at the Comedy Castle in Royal Oak, Michigan, October 17th to the 19th. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. Great to have you checking out our show this week. Very, very talented actor, director, producer, writer. He does so many things. Has a new film out called The Last Photograph. And you also know him from X-Men Origins, The Constant Gardener, 21 Grams. Danny Houston, great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So there's so much I want to talk to you about, but we'll talk about the movie for a second that you have out now, The Last Photograph. And it centers around your character's son boarding Pan Am Flight 103 that ended up getting taken down, unfortunately. And sort of the story kind of emanates from that, and sort of give people a thumbnail of sort of what goes on once that plane crashes.
Well, the concept of the story is quite simple. It's a man who loses or has a photograph stolen from him, and this sends him into a panic. He spirals out of control, and in the telling of the story, which is a sort of a tapestry or collage of memories, we understand what the photograph symbolizes. And it's a photograph of his son, who boarded the Pan Am Flight 103 December 22nd, 1988, which was one of the first big terrorist attacks of that size. With a lot of American casualties. And it was interesting for me from a directing point of view, because I had this sort of tapestry to work with, and I worked with different formats and film and cameras to try to create the different time frames. So that was quite exhilarating. And I cast myself because I knew I would... I was available, and I knew that I would hopefully turn up on time.
which is always a good thing for a director to know about an actor. Was there something about this that resonated with you personally? I had actually had a friend who was on that flight that perished. Unfortunately, this was, you know, he was in his late 20s, and it was the first realization of like, just how bad the world can be for me. You know, like it was one of those things that happened to, that doesn't happen to me or people I know. It happens to other people, you know, but then it happened to me. It was a close friend, and it was a very weird thing to get over. You don't really always get over it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the film is very much about that. And it is also about one's own personal losses and how we treasure possessions. And, you know, a photograph or a book or a sweater we attach our memories of the person that we've loved. And so it I think the film works on a sort of very private, intimate level, but is also about the beginning of terrorist attacks of that sort of senseless size, and it relates to me with mass shootings and you know, when you turn on the news and you see last photographs pour onto the screen, there's a this feeling of loss and with kids, with youth, and it's just all the more appalling.
How are you, when you're directing and acting, how do you direct yourself? I mean, do you have someone off set? You know, obviously when you're acting and you're acting well, you're not stepping outside yourself and assessing your performance as you're doing it. Like, how does that work technically? How do you make all of that work?
It is a little schizophrenic, and you can't really rely, because you know you're the director, so you can't really rely on other people's opinions. It could just all become a little bit too confusing if you were trying to please too many people. So you just kind of hope you've got it, and if you're a director who's maybe I'll become a little impatient with my performance. I'll be like, "Well, come on, get it right." And especially on a low budget independent film, you don't have much time on your hands. So it's a strange experience. But you kind of know it within yourself when you think you've done your best, and then you kind of swiftly have to move on and move on to the new location, or you know, get on with the day's work.
Yeah, I mean, just for listeners who don't know, you know, kind of the inner workings of filmmaking. Obviously, low budget, people understand that, but what is it that you give up when you're low budget? Is it the luxury of time, the luxury of being able to get a second or a third or a fourth take, or to get the lighting exactly right? What sacrifices when there isn't a big budget involved?
Well, I mean, all of the above. But basically, narrow it down to time. You don't really have time. Not only do you not have time while you're making it, you also don't have time when you're editing it and mixing it, creating the music and sound effects, et cetera, for it. That stuff is quite costly, mixing stage, et cetera. But, you know, when you are low budget, and as we were in the last photograph, I was able to stop filming and shoot us in a rather unconventional way and just shoot the Christmas stuff for real, Christmas in London, and then wait for the summer to shoot the stuff in the park with the young lovers. And I used lots of different types of cameras and footage. I used a Canon still camera, which was fantastic. But what's great about independent films is that it's the unapologetic nature of it. You can kind of do what you want when you want, and that's a luxury that you don't have on the bigger films.
When you started acting in 75, I mean, you come from this very storied family. Your father's John Huston, your grandfather's Walter Huston, a great actor in his own right. And then you turned to directing for quite a while, and then back to acting and directing. What is when you're directing, as an act, what helps you in your directing, given that you were an actor? What helps you, you know, in that regard, and vice versa, when you're acting, what has directing done for you to help you as an actor? I would imagine they feed each other in some way.
Yeah, they do. I mean, there is a sort of a dance, a sort of waltz that happens when you're kind of feeling good about yourself. Now, of course, your own internal experience as an actor isn't necessarily what is being filmed or how it's later put together. So sometimes you can have quite a frustrating time thinking, I haven't got it right. This is not working. And then maybe that's your best work. And other times you think you're doing good, and then maybe that's your worst work. So it's hard because you've got to kind of really, really have to be in the context of the entire piece. And the only person who has that vision really is the director. He's the captain of the ship, and he knows how to steer it because he has a wider understanding. Mm. From an acting point of view, it's more about what you feel and how you're interpreting the character. But it's great when you have harmony with the camera, when you know the camera has caught a gesture or has in a way you want the camera to be a bit of a thief. You want it to steal the emotion from the performance rather than the performance being overly stated. So with the camera.
So in other words, trusting that the emotion that you want to convey as an actor is there, and that the camera will catch that, as opposed to pushing or being too big, so to speak.
Exactly. And there is a sort of something about the camera that there's an element where it steals, you know, it's the theft, it's the sort of robbery, I feel, when it captures an emotion, and we, the audience, sense the reality of it.
Do you remember sort of as an actor really pushing and now looking back going, oh God, I don't like that performance or whatever. In other words, and then you finally, the light went on at some point where you realized you didn't have to quote unquote push so much.
I think, you know, in my earlier work, where I didn't know what I was doing, I think, in a way, probably my best work. and there's nothing worse than trying to repeat that, you know?
Yeah.
So it's tricky, and every film requires a different technique, really, in a sense. It's always a different galaxy, a different experience, different set of characters. So in that regard, it's always, it always keeps me, you know, on my toes, and I've never been able to shake my nerves or sense of anticipation before I work on a project. Thank God, you know, that keeps me alive.
Yeah, yeah. You kind of work in what I'll call a family business. You know, I grew up in a furniture store, so we were always around the store, working together in the store, learning from my parents about furniture. Your family, obviously, and your stepsister as well, sort of this family tree of great actors and directors. What did you take away from your dad? I know he produced some of your works, and you worked with him a lot. And what were some of the bigger sort of lessons that you took from him? And do you still kind of hang on to those today and doing your own work?
Well, you mentioned the family business. Walter Huston, a tremendous actor, my father John Huston, great film director. Sister Angelica, cool, really cool sister I have.
Yeah.
And my nephew Jack, who's doing great. It is a family business, and. I've never been, or I wasn't, and I don't believe that I am all that bashful about mentioning my family. It's something that's really important to me, and that's something that also, you know, I'm measuring myself up against my father is like measuring myself up against a giant. You know, it's like it keeps my ambitions high as far as the last thing I'd ever want to do is embarrass my family name. It's important to me. So I've never been that bashful. It's always got my foot in the door. If I mentioned John Houston, especially when I was starting out. And at one point I said to my father, I said, you know, maybe it's embarrassing. Maybe I got to be careful. You know, I mean, you're helping me in all these things, but you know, this maybe I was starting to feel a little shy about it. And he said, no. He goes, don't be that way. He goes, because my father, Walter, gave me my first shot on a film called Maltese Falcon. the actor on the film, a guy called George Raft, didn't want to work on the film because it was a first-time director. And much to my father's delight, he was able to cast Humphrey Bogart. But the film got made only because my grandfather was a star and said, you know, give my son a chance.
Incredible. What was it like for your dad working with Humphrey Bogart? Did he ever talk about that much and what that experience was like on that, working on that whole film for the first time? Must have been incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were pals. They probably larked around a lot. If the stories are all true, they laughed a lot, joked around a lot.
had a few drinks.
Well, Catherine Hepburn's book, it says that, you know, on African Queen, that they were incredibly immature, and they were like kids, and she'd get irritated with them every so often. But everybody on that production had dysentery; they all had stomach problems, except my father and Bogart. And so they were like, why is that? So they started tracking their habits. And of course, the reason was that they never drank water.
There you go. The benefits of alcohol. That's great. When you would have dinner with your dad, you're sitting around the table with the family. I mean, would you talk shop? I mean, there must be incredible stories of sort of growing up in that environment and then working together. Or did you come home from a film together and dissect to the work that day? How did that interplay work?
Yeah, well, you know, as kids, we were removed from the sort of Hollywood world. You know, my father was very kind of distant in that regard, and he had a beautiful home in Ireland, and most of the conversation really was about horses and stuff like that. But you know, these great guests would arrive, and I remember having dinner as I was a young teenage boy, having dinner with Ava Gardner and my mother, and Ava turned up, and she was literally wearing Dr. Scholl's and a little sort of scarf and hardly any makeup on, and I was gazing at her, and after dinner, when she left, I was gobsmacked. And my mother said, "What's wrong with you?" And I said to her, "I think I'm in love." She slapped the back of my head and said, "Of course you are. It's Ava Gardner, for Christ's sake." But you know, working and knowing these you know, legends was just fantastic. And I directed Robert Mitchum in a picture. And in the morning, I'd say, "Good morning, Bob. How are you?" He'd say, "Worse." "You like some coffee?" "Would you like some coffee?" "Makes me fart."
They
didn't take themselves too seriously, you know.
Right, and the unfortunate thing now is, if that were the case and that were known, and which was known, that you know, it would be front page news, and it would be controversy, and so is an alcoholic, and this and that. I don't, you know,
it just seems like a different time to make movies now than it was then in that sense. They all did great work back then, but they had fun and they didn't have to hide it, you know, but now it seems like you do. And I don't know if that's a good thing or not.
It certainly makes one feel nostalgic. That's for sure. You know, my father was also a very modern thinker, and I think that if he was working now, he'd find new ways of approaching film, and he, like Orson Welles, they'd be really excited at the possibility of what they could do. I remember him complaining about censorship sometimes and not being able to tackle certain subjects that he wanted to tackle. So, I think they'd be alive and dynamic today in the present. But they don't make men like that anymore. And it's a deeply romantic nostalgia for me that. The world has changed into a more sort of corporate, especially the film industry is more corporate than it was then.
Was there a particular actor that was a challenge, good or otherwise, to work with, direct, sort of get the performance you wanted out of them, so to speak? That really comes to mind was that was that you were happy to work with, but you know, it was a bit of an interesting experience.
Yeah. You know what? I can't think of anybody. Mm-hmm. I directed, Klaus Maria Brandauer, who had a terrible reputation, and he was absolutely wonderful. Mm. I worked with Burt Reynolds as well, who before working with him, I think I was told, you know that he hits directors. Okay. And he's an absolute joy. Mm. Lauren Bacall. Lauren Bacall. I worked with her, and she was at times a little challenging. Mm-hmm. I remember the assistant director coming in and with a bright red cheek, because she slapped him across the face because he walked her dog for too long. and the assistant director was really kind of upset, and I was like, oh, come on, man, you were slapped by Lauren Bacall. What's wrong with you?
Exactly. You should never wash that cheek again is what you should do. That's royalty.
Yeah.
And what about working on Yellowstone with Kevin Costner? How have you been enjoying that and filming in Montana and all of that?
Well, he's great. You know, Kevin Costner's really got that sort of, it's almost like a Robert Mitchum style. He's like, you're having a conversation with him, then the camera runs and he shoots the scene and he continues talking, and you don't really, it's a sort of transparent act. You don't know when it starts and when it ends. It's just, there's a real ease. Mm-hmm. There are no affectations, and he just sort of eases into it. He's really, really cool that way. Mm-hmm. And the locations are tremendous. It's such a big character, Montana, and we shoot in Utah as well, around Park City, and you really feel the seasons change, and it's a spectacular palette.
Yeah, it really is. Well, you've just done such amazing work, and it's a real joy to be able to talk to you. I've really just admired a lot of what you've done and continue to do, and the movie's The Last Photograph. He goes to see you in Yellowstone, and I'm sure you've got other projects coming up, and it's really great to have you on, and best of luck in everything you do, and if you get slapped by a big star, give me a call. Let me know. I'd love to hear about it.
Thank you very much. It was a joy talking to you.
Okay. Danny Houston, everybody. Thank you.
There you go. Danny Houston. Great guy, man. His films, he's in all these major films. You know him, you've seen him, and he's been doing great work for 40 years. And also, don't forget, October 17th to the 19th, I will be at the Comedy Castle in Royal Oak, Michigan. Come on out and see me. And for now, this is Paul Eric Mercurio, signing off. We'll see you guys next week.